Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to All Things WordPress and WooCommerce, a Do the Woo podcast show. This show is brought to you by OmniSend, the solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops and your own website and hosting your, whether you're building a WordPress site or specifically a Woo store. Their infrastructure brings your client site speed, uptime, and security.
Welcome to this episode of Do the Woo. We're talking emerging tech, and today we're talking with Robert Norton from Verisart. Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Good. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
No worries. And I should probably say I'm your host, Dave Lockie, as well. So I guess a bit about you, Robert. You're the CEO and founder of Verisart. What came before that, and what's your journey been like as an entrepreneur since?
For the last 15 years, I found myself at the intersection of art and tech. Prior to Verisart, which is a platform that started doing blockchain certification for the art and collectibles market. Prior to that, I was running a company called Sedition Art, which was in a way one of the first platforms that sold digital limited editions by well-known artists. Now, of course, we come to know digital limited editions as non-fungible tokens and NFTs, which I know we're going to get into later. But it was my time at Sedition between 2010 to 2013 that really got me thinking about how artists can find new audiences in other mediums than their principal medium, which was at the time, most of the artists we worked with at Sedition, their principal medium was physical, not digital. And prior to that, I was the founder CEO of Saatchi Art, previously known as Saatchi Online. And then I came in and we turned it into a e-commerce enabled platform where artists who didn't have any gallery representation could have a platform where they could show their work and sell direct to consumers. And so we, in a way, did a lot of that kind of like heavy lifting for them. In some ways, it's analogous perhaps to like Etsy, but with a more focus on independent working artists. And I guess, like, why did I end up in this sort of strange intersection? Probably because I think in the back of my mind, I wanted to do something in the art world. Both my kind of parents did art degrees. My grandfather was a restorer. So I grew up in a household where, you know, the idea of unauthorized or authorized reproductions was quite prevalent. You'd often see in the case of some 19th century works where studios like Joshua Reynolds would have many sort of works or the same coming from the studio, some of which just worked on by his students, some of which he'd worked in part, some of which was, you know, he worked entirely. And yep. So this sort of area of like multiples was really interesting to me. And then I guess the aha moment with Verisart was just looking at the case of the Knoedler Gallery, which came to the press around 2015. One of the oldest galleries in New York was found guilty of selling fake Rothkos, which is a well-known post-war artist in the States, Mark Rothko. So selling these works by the dozen in like modern times, in some contemporary times in 2015, and selling them not just to unwitting people that should know better, but to people like the chairman of Sotheby's himself. So I was thinking, well, this is a real problem that you have such trust in authorities that are clearly not able to be trusted. And so I was trying to think, how do you improve trust with the advent of distributed ledger technology? And really, we've been just tackling that problem now for almost 10 years. And just to give you a little bit of an insight, before that, I started my career back in 95 at America Online, initially in business development, and then running e-commerce, and then did a bunch of startups from health to games. I was the person that launched King.com in North America. So I was the first managing director for King.com in North America. So I guess my whole career has been in consumer-facing e-commerce, is how I would describe it. And while we're not a marketplace at Verisart, we do help people with their drops and their releases. And actually, we've now started offering a token-gated print service, which takes us closer to revenue-generating opportunities for artists as well.
Amazing. So what strikes me about your like founding story is that this was not just a love of art. This was a very personal relationship with not just art, because it was all around you, but with artists and with people who were trying to make a living with art, the artists themselves, the people that are all around that industry, the restorers, the galleries, the marketplaces. So this is obviously a very deeply connected and personal mission for you.
I think Steve Jobs said you can connect the dots looking backwards, but you don't necessarily connect them moving forwards. I didn't necessarily feel it as personally, but now I think it makes sense. And my wife also has a gallery that we work with, and I met my wife through my interest in art. So I guess we're very much an art family at this point. But really, it was to do with the advent of blockchain technology. That's really what inspired me to do this business. And one of the artists that we worked with in my former company, Sedition Art, is a company, there's an artist called Casey Reese. Casey is also the co-inventor, along with Ben Fry, of a language called Processing, which enabled artists to effectively generate their digital art rules-based programming language for effectively some type of early form generative art or digital art. And it was Casey who wrote to me in 2014 and said, "Hey, Robert, just looking at what you were doing at Saatchi Online and Saatchi Art and Sedition Art, and I think this technology has real potential for certification verification purposes, both for physical and digital art." And so it was really that sort of, really? Wow. Okay. How? And then you start diving down the rabbit hole of understanding the way blockchains work and consensus mechanisms and like ways that you can trust a timeline and that you can trust the commitments to that timeline. It felt like a really good application for some of the problems that we were facing with our provenance and certification. And in a nutshell, what we were doing was taking the certificate, which typically had just been issued by some sort of authority, maybe in the States, maybe a studio, maybe a gallery, and then taking the provenance, which is another fancy word for story. What is the story, the agreed story around the history of that object? And that may include exhibition literature as well. And then we were taking the kind of registry, like who's ultimately responsible. And so binding the certificate, the provenance, and the registry together by shared distributed ledger technology standards, I think makes for a stronger provenance. And that's really what we've been doing at Verisart.
Yeah, really interesting. And maybe you could talk to us about what that journey's looked like. Has it been one where there's been a lot of pivoting, large or small, or has it been more a case of feeling like you've got the right solution, but the job is to educate and make aware and on board? Like, how would you describe that 10 years?
10 years ago, there was a percentage of a percent of households owned crypto. And I think now we're in well into double digits, depending on certain age groups. I think it's up to 40% and other kind of, as a whole, I think it's about 20% or so of households in the US now own crypto in one form or another. So we've come a long way. And sometimes people talk about the way that the number of households owning crypto kind of parallels the growth in the number of households that went online in the early kind of days of internet service providers and online services. But I think that whether those correlate correctly, I think the point is that we've grown from a very small base to something that feels closer to mainstream, although it's not yet at mainstream kind of levels of adoption. We're not past a 50% threshold in most markets. There are a few, perhaps, exceptions like El Salvador, where Bitcoin's become an alternative national currency. But if I could characterize a little bit what it was like in 2014, I was at this Scaling Bitcoin conference at Stanford University. There was literally probably about 200 people in the community that then went on to build aspects of the blockchain infrastructure that we're familiar with today. And that was probably kind of pretty much the size of the industry for well-known players at that point. So it was very small. And even at the sort of conferences, you would struggle to get more than 1,000 or so people to show up. And whereas now we've got huge conferences from DeFi to NFTs to staking to wallet providers, new L1s, which is layer one blockchains, new rollups and L2s and conferences for all these different sort of types. So the industry has really evolved. And back in 2014, 2015, I used to spend most of my time explaining what a blockchain was and then why the words art and blockchain were in the same sentence. Now, because of the NFT boom and bust that we witnessed in 2021, no one really questions why the words art and blockchain go together. And so we've come a long way in terms of people's understanding of what this technology can do. But we're still set back by the early years in terms of the bad actors in the space. We've seen arrests of the principals at FTX and also Binance, and the bad actors erodes consumer trust. And that's very unhelpful when you're trying to bring new technologies to the market. So in some ways, it was like two steps forward, one step back. But we've really come a long way since over the last 10 years. And as a result, we can start focusing more on the applications and less explaining what's beneath the hood.
Yeah. And I think because there's such a visual representation, maybe the only visual representation of crypto technology that kind of most people can find, because it's got that artistic element to it, and there have been a lot of bad actors, that the worlds where art and finance meet are often slightly murky and grey anyway. And I think when you accelerate that with, like, you pull the petrol of the internet on it, and there have been a lot of problematic NFT projects. So I can imagine that's been particularly challenging for you. You're certainly right. There's lots of data points, but the trend line is increasing adoption, increasing awareness. Now, you mentioned this idea about mainstream, and one of the conversations that I hear in crypto is crypto will be mainstream when people are using it without knowing that it's crypto. Now, I noticed that at Verisite, you take a very deliberately technology inclusive approach to describing what you do. How often do you find yourself in a situation where you're trying to explain Verisite to somebody who is utterly naive and ignorant to crypto and blockchain? Do you ever find success in converting those merchants or artists, or is this always a more kind of progressive and educational sell where they have to get some foundations before they can see the value in what you do?
We've got a good history of working with artists, and we were one of the first external curators on SuperRare, which is a well-known premium platform for unique digital artworks, so one-of-ones is what they're often referred to. And back in 2021, because of my time at Sedition, where we worked with many well-known artists from Damien Hirst to Bill Viola to Tracy Emin, Shepard Fairey, Christian Boltanski, Yoko Ono, we probably worked with 100 of the world's top contemporary artists during my time at Sedition, and it's still continuing to this day. And that sort of experience of speaking to an artist, understanding, well, what do they want to release as a digital edition? Can we help them? Have they got the facilities to do it in-house themselves? Yeah, this is a sort of discussion that was more complex during the NFT boom and bust, because there were now things like, okay, you need a wallet, but you need a smart contract. How are you going to be minting under which smart contract and stuff like that? But we were able to have those discussions because we understood the issues ourselves. But we really have done a huge number of inaugural artist NFTs. So whether it's Ro Etheridge, William Wegman, Shepard Fairey, Petra Courtwright, Neil Balufa, Random International, Rob Pruitt, a lot of well-known kind of artists in inaugural NFTs, and they came to us because they were somewhat confused by this landscape and they wanted somebody that they could trust and guide them through this process. And so we did two drops with SuperRare, 10x10 and 8x8, focused really on inaugural artist NFTs. And then we also did Artsy's first NFT drop in the early 2022, which was 22 artists. And so, yes, we're absolutely in the business of handholding. However, when it comes to looking for our audience and the actual users of our service, the SaaS users, so the people that subscribe to our software, we've just tended to find that it's very hard work dragging someone along to the drinking trough, if you see what I mean. It's better that they're already there and by the waterside, and then you can perhaps help them more effectively. So we're not so much in the business of telling people that they need to use blockchain technology, but we're more in the business of explaining how we can provide a good service for people that are already looking at that area.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. And as a small business, you have to focus on what's achievable within your resources and timescales. So I'm sure a lot of the awareness work you're doing is also going to have a knock-on effect further down into the future, but you certainly have to be judicious with where you're putting that time and energy. So one thing that I think about quite a lot, and this is with NFTs generally, not just art-based NFTs. Of course, there's some philosophical conversation about what is and isn't art. Whenever you use a new medium or format for art, it brings new constraints and opportunities creatively. And so with digital, it allowed for, I don't know, for example, algorithmic generative art. However, then when you take digital art and put it on chain, that also changes the format and the medium. And what I'm thinking about here is the public nature of interaction with that art. Who minted it? Who collected it? Has it been sold on secondary? What's the price trend, all of that? My question is, to what extent is that interesting and exciting and offering new opportunities to artists where they may have had like glimpses of that historically, seeing their art up for sale or auction or whatever, but they now have this opportunity to be directly in communication with people that hold their art? Because if you both have wallets, then there are plenty of ways to contact each other.
There's a lot to unpack there. So the first is that obviously, you know, art is now as easily tradable an asset as an NFT as the fungible token is, the fungible token being Ethereum or Bitcoin or Solana or Tezos or any of these other sort of chains that are out there that are in the business of minting coins and having people speculate on the value of those coins and the value that those networks will be able to accumulate. And so remember that they all sit within the same type of wallets. And that was never the case with art before, right? If you had a painting, it may have been an asset, but it didn't sit within your bank account and you could trade it like you could trade pound or dollars or euros. You're absolutely right to first bring that up. And what the kind of blockchain did, and particularly NFTs, is it basically meant that all the digital art that was released as NFTs were now effectively like financial instruments, which is why you suddenly saw crazy amounts of speculation and wash trading and activities that kind of created these elevated floor prices for works that were sold or given away in the case of CryptoPunks, or sold like sort of Bored Apes in these sort of 10K drops, which became the symbol really of the sort of height of the sort of market, where the algorithms were spitting out 10,000 different variations of a theme, may have been sorted by traits, that they had like a certain kind of rare background or shape on their head or whatever it might be.
Laser eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And these things like artists started to use as well, like traits around art. And I think it became very confusing for a lot of people to determine what is art and what is just a PFP, a personal profile picture, which is what some of these also very valuable assets like the punks and the apes came to symbolize. I think that's all now beginning to shake out. And I'll talk a little bit more about, I think, what the challenges are for artists. I think, in fact, there are probably more challenges than opportunities, because the artists get exhausted by having to maintain a constant dialogue with their community. And also their community turn on them if the financial returns of their art goes down. And so it puts a lot of sort of pressure and stress on the artists. And they, traditionally, the artists have had dealers to remove some of their kind of need to be there talking to their collectors. So I think, look, there are healthy, protective, like, art communities. And I think the Art Blocks community, which we work with quite closely, we've integrated with the Art Blocks engine. And the generative art community tends to be quite small and protective of one another. And I think that's also a good example of where, on the whole, there's a healthier discourse, but it's not completely removed from those people that just want to speculate on your digital art as an asset and then feel disappointed when prices don't go their way. So I think, yeah, the first thing is, I think that clearly art's now more of a tradable instrument than it was. That means it attracts speculators, and the speculators outweigh the collectors. And we've seen that with the rise of those marketplaces that don't enforce artist royalties. And that's really symptomatic of the fact that there are more speculators than collectors still in the market. And we then, in this new world, we've just done a show actually of Gazelli Art House that's currently open called Awaken Metamagical Hands. And it has some of the kind of really big pioneers in the space like John Mader, Golan Levin, Helena Saron, Joshua Davis, Leah, but also some of the younger ones like Robbie Barrett and Lauren Lee McCarthy. And all of these artists could have a solo show themselves, but they're still very much like trying to understand what is the role of algorithms in terms of their relationship to others or even to themselves. And so we have this work by Lauren Lee McCarthy, who's a professor at UCLA in the Design, Media, and Arts Lab, along with Casey Reese. And it's actually this thing called a saliva exchange, where she's created this sort of installation where people can come in and spit in a little vial and write a few things about their saliva and share it with somebody else that's done that. And it's very much a conceptual piece that is really addressing some of these kind of like questions around the way that algorithms are pervasive in our life and how, you know, that changes the way that we interact with others or what the sort of notion of modern day intimacy look like. I think that there are different artists that are exploring the different digital trends that are out there, some that are doing it in a more kind of obvious way, using Midjourney or some of the algorithms that OpenAI have enabled for generative video, generative art, basically text to art prompts and stuff like that. And then there are other artists that are building their own software, their own code, others that are using platforms that are out there, and others that are really commenting on it, even though they have the full technical ability to be generating their own code and creating visual outputs, because Lauren was a creator of P5.js, which is processing, basically the sort of way that people use processing in browser. But she's choosing to, as an artist, focus on, as I said, these sort of more conceptual fields. So I think it's a really interesting time. I do think, though, that the principal responsibility of an artist is to create art, not to pump their communities. And I think that those artists that perhaps shot to fame by pumping their communities may not be the ones that last from a museum or like historical standpoint.
Yeah, interesting. It strikes me that digital and then blockchain art has been extremely disruptive, and that disruption continues and is still being explored. And you said there are some trends that are emerging out of there, like very art-focused communities that are positive and nurturing, and then people who are really pushing the boundaries of what you can do with generative and on-chain. It seems to me like there's still a lot more emergence to happen.
Whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on, because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results, all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org. As a builder or an agency managing multiple sites, check out Hostinger.com. Their infrastructure brings your client's site speed, uptime, and security. Also, at your fingertips, you'll find a powerful suite of tools for security and performance, code and content management. Now add to that the ability to manage your WordPress website through WP CLI for control configuration and plugin updates, enhanced WordPress acceleration powered by Lightspeed Enterprise, control over auto updates, free migrations, and of course, the essential staging sites. Through all of their services and features comes e-commerce optimization for your clients' Woo shops. So when you think about it, overall, everything you need to keep your client sites running smooth can be found with their agency hosting at hostinger.com.
So let's switch gears a little bit, if that's okay. We've mainly talked about art and blockchain so far. What I'd like to do is to bring this back down to earth for a Woo audience. So out there, we may have merchants listening who are selling art or interested in how they can use NFTs to enhance what they're doing with e-commerce. We almost certainly have agency folks who are interested and would love to get their teams working with some of these technologies, and they're thinking about which of my clients might want to use this technology, what does success look like, etc., etc. We've talked about art being wrapped in these digital tokens, so digital assets tokenized and put into these common digital wallets. That extends out to real world assets as well, and that might be cases of wine, might be physical artwork, might be fractions of an old Mercedes, could be whatever it is. So if you're just doing stuff on chain, if you're just issuing NFTs, minting NFTs, and people are just transacting with them on chain, then you don't really need a traditional e-commerce setup, because you can do this through marketplaces. The whole idea is that you don't need fulfillment because it's all digital. You don't need a traditional payment processor and checkout because it's all based on wallet signatures and digital asset transfers. And yet there is then this world where there is a lot of e-commerce happening, and you do need e-commerce. You do need to take delivery. You do need to accept orders. You do need to worry about tax and payments and everything else. So where do those two worlds intersect? What does a merchant or a success story look like where you get those two things? Because clearly Verisart operates in both the kind of purely digital world and then through the Woo integration, and I think you're integrated with Shopify as well, in that intersectional world between real world e-commerce and this sort of the brave new digital only experience.
Yeah, it's a great question. So look, it's super helpful when the certification is happening at the time of sale. Because otherwise, if you're just creating certificates on Verisart.com and you're doing your sale through some other mechanism, we don't currently support sales on Verisart.com, then you're always going to have a lag, right? Between sort of the sale, the invoice happening on some platform, whether it's your own, whether it's your third-party marketplace, whether it's offline and you're doing it just in a person-to-person real-world transaction. And so we've always felt that it's helpful to close that gap in time, so that you can actually be there at the time of transaction in terms of the certification. Now, obviously, of NFTs, again, you can mint an NFT and then you can choose to list it later. So people do sometimes do that on Verisart, but mostly people mint and sell the NFT at the same time. And so what we found in the early years of Verisart is that when we didn't have any e-commerce integrations, people would just use us, and then we didn't see enough like transfers of the certificates. And so we wanted to make that easier for people. And so, yeah, back 5 years ago, we did our first app with Shopify. We're super happy that we just launched our WooCommerce app this year. We learned a lot from our time on the other marketplace platform in terms of building a good app from day one with the WooCommerce audience. But our app really does a number of things. It enables people to certify products, and they can be either physical or digital. I can give you some examples of those in a second. And then it also allows you to mint NFTs or tokens. One thing that we don't support is we don't support fractions of an object, because once you start offering like fractions of something, you are into a sort of a world of like securities regulation. And it's one that we stay well clear of. And also, I don't think that fractionalizing, and I've spoken this before, fractionalizing an artwork is necessarily like where there's real demand for fractionalized opportunities. I think that fractionalizing businesses that provide you a yield or a return that can be valued as more of an obvious kind of like first spot than like however exciting it sounds at fractionalizing an artwork. Because there often isn't consensus around price for unique artworks. And it's often driven by who the auction house has lined up against one another in terms of creating the sale. But let's get back to some use cases for WooCommerce merchants. Firstly, we've seen a real big trend in collectibles and a broader definition of luxury as well. If you thought about luxury from a historical standpoint, yes, you might have your handbags and your cars and your rings, but probably not hoodies and sneakers and stuff. But clearly that is part of modern day luxury. And we've seen a huge series of kind of advances with regards to what are kind of collectibles and limited editions and across all different types of things. So on various sites, if you've got something that's a collectible and you have an authority like a living creator or some or a trusted business, that is a really good opportunity then to say, hey, how can I improve upon my current certificate of authenticity, which I may just be printing and issuing myself, and I now want to provide digital certification branded by my store that can be verified by new owners real time at the time of an online transaction. So that's really the core of our business. And so we do have lots and lots of different kind of types of businesses that will use our certification for anything from custom champagne bottles to special golf clubs to digital prints and photography and stuff like that. I'll give you a good example, actually. So we worked last year with Johnny Depp, and he'd already built a community of NFT holders. So he didn't use Verisart for his NFTs. He'd already built that community and sold those NFTs outside of a traditional e-commerce platform and done it directly through a sort of like native Web3 drop. However, he then wanted to give something back to those NFT holders. And we're seeing this quite a lot now, which is that he wanted to allow people to have a print of their NFT because they're like nice NFTs that has like part of his artwork, his friends, and you know, they look at like a sort of pop art type of image. And so there you've now got the need to have orders, and you know, there's going to be a lag between the time of placing the order and the time of receiving the actual purchase, and you know, what you get out of the box, which these NFT platforms were not very good at, is a lot of the good sort of order management at the back end and reporting and stuff like that. In his case, he spun up a Shopify store and used Verisart to certify his prints. And so his prints were effectively run through that way. So when you think about like merchant needs, whether they're like Web2 or Web3, and by the way, I really dislike this Web2 or Web3. I think we'll probably hopefully drop it at some point, because I think that one of the challenges with this industry has been that there's just been so much like oppositional terms or confusing sort of terms, even digital art versus physical art. These things, I think, don't need to be in opposition. They can actually be inclusive. And I think for the average person, they will think of them as not either or, but and, oh yeah, and I'll have a bit of that, and I'll have a bit of that. Yeah. So what we're seeing now is that you don't want to be too splintered out there. Often when you've got new like mediums, like you talked about, you know, there may only be a few platforms initially that support it. Like, it's quite difficult running your own generative art platform because there is a certain amount of like investment in the way that the code works in the back end to enable people to release generative art projects. But you can definitely run your own drop right now. And we've come a long way in terms of giving people the tooling to build their own kind of like Web3 marketplaces if that's what they want to do. However, those merchants that already have a significant presence through their own website, you might well have a merchant that has its own domain, is using WooCommerce, but it's also on Amazon and it's got a profile on Amazon and selling the same types of products and services. And that's a perfect example, right? That you would say, okay, I've got a lot of people coming to my URL, and what else can I do on that URL rather than now have to have like parts of my inventory now shown on another third-party marketplace or another sort of platform. So we really do believe that is the future, that people will do more and more things under their own URL as or under their own social media channels as, you know, these integrations of e-commerce become like easier. And so traditionally, it was quite difficult to sell any NFTs on these kind of traditional e-commerce marketplaces. And in fact, I think we're still among the first handful of companies that WooCommerce has allowed in to enable merchants to mint NFTs, and we're so delighted to be there. But that's really the way I think they work together. It makes total sense where you would use existing e-commerce infrastructure for physical works. But I also think it makes total sense why you can now have those digital assets live alongside those physical, because increasingly they have a relationship to one another. You buy a physical asset, maybe it grants you a token, which is a form of membership. So now you're closer to that artist's world, and you might give away that token for free. And that's something that we currently support. You might buy a token, which then allows you access to purchase a print or purchase an exclusive sort of product at a reduced cost or at a time you're further ahead in line than the others. And I think there's a lot of ways that digital and physical can complement each other. And also, we're starting to see artists really experiment with these two sort of mediums and offering experiences together. So for example, the show that we're doing, as I said, that we co-curated the show at Gazelli Art House in London, and the artists there are actually using Verisart to certify their prints, but their prints are certified as an NFT. So that's like a next step where you're not actually separating out the certification just on one time step. You're actually saying that certification itself can be an NFT. So we've done a whole bunch of work to support the way that the NFT can now point to your physical object. We're constantly looking at better ways that we can provide merchants and creators with tools to certifying their objects and whether those objects are physical or digital, or to map the relationship between the two.
So I guess there's a bit of a double-edged sword there of this is potentially a tool that artists can use to build community and engage with that community, but not all artists. So there's some nuance and some unpacking to do around that for individual artists as they try and get that balance right as well. So one thing that you hinted at is this idea that you might buy the digital token first, and that gives you the right to then buy a physical print or to redeem it for some sort of experience, you know, later on. And it strikes me that fundamentally changes how art can be paid for as well. So instead of the artist having to create the art and then hope they can sell it, they can, to some extent at least, pre-sell it. They can, or fund the collection through pre-selling it. In fact, I think, was it the Crypto Venetians did that? Did you watch that? They did a documentary I watched.
Yeah, and we work with, that's a good example. We work with Bright Moments. We did their finale. We partnered with them in Venice earlier this year. And actually, that's exactly what we did. We had a poster that was only available to the holders of tokens from that last city, which was 1,000 sort of tokens that were minted during Venice, Italy, just after the Biennale this year.
Yeah, that was such a good documentary. I can't find it online yet, but I watched it at NFC Lisbon. It was really good fun, very heartwarming. Okay, I've got two more questions for you. One's a bit of a double barrel one, though, so maybe that's cheating. What would you say is the difference between a receipt and a certificate of authenticity? Because they both have similar attributes, right? Something like if it's still under warranty and you have the original receipt, that can improve the secondary resale value of something. So it has some element of proof of authenticity to it. And something that I just think is stupid, and perhaps deliberately so, is that we haven't created digital infrastructure for receipts. So we can go spend, but we don't get digital receipts back automatically. For example, what's the best way to know how healthily you're eating? It's to analyze all the receipts that you get from takeaways and supermarket shops and divide that by the number of people and their age, and suddenly you can actually have a much richer view of nutrition across your family. So that just as an example, but what's the difference between a receipt and a certificate of authenticity, both in terms of their nature and what that offers as onwards value?
Actually, in the case of token gated prints, we actually do incorporate the order number as part of the certificate of authenticity, and also the token ID that was used along with that order number. But we have a number of patents at Verisart for the way that we handle certification. And so on the one end, you've got something called an unverified record, which means that I've said something about an object, but no one really knows who I am. And no one really knows if what I've said is true or false. So it's the lowest amount of weighting. Then we have something called an issuer certificate. That's similar to a receipt. It's basically the retailer of the object is saying that this thing is true. Now, when you've actually got an artwork where the retailer is not necessarily the creator, then the certificate of authenticity is where the creator has authorized that statement of that object being true that the retailer may have said. And then finally, we have something called a certificate of authenticity plus, where there's a physical identifier on the work, like a QR tag or an NFC tag or some sort of verifiable characteristic at the sort of last millimeter on the physical asset that can be determined. And so the core part of Verisign is that the certification can change state depending on the consensus, most importantly, the creator. And really, the problem in the past has been that the receipt is often the last thing the creator hears about. The collector gets it, but the creator might be told, oh, that receipt didn't quite happen until maybe a year later, so we don't owe you any money. The benefit with Verisign is that it puts the creator a lot more in control because they actually know that when their certificates are transferred, that there is a transaction out there, and that is helpful from a creator perspective. So while there are some similarities between receipts and certificates of authenticity, they are fundamentally different. And another reason they're fundamentally different is that receipts require the issuer of those receipts to be present in the future, and for the issuer of the receipts, again, to be like someone that hasn't acted in a corrupt or in a way that's not trustworthy. As I said right at the beginning of our sort of talk, that was the inspiration for Verisign, which is that issuers of these receipts were actually sending out fake works. There was nothing wrong with a receipt, but actually what it pointed to was like fake. And I think there's still challenges, by the way, in the Web3 world with how NFTs have been first construed, which is that effectively the transactions are correct, but what they point to may be incorrect. And so really, this is the world that Verisign is actively trying to address, which is to build more trust at the time of transaction, and also to ensure that the creator is present in terms of their own level of authentication for the work that's been sold. And this is why NFTs as COAs is interesting. COA standing for certificate of authenticity is interesting, is that actually, even if Verisign goes away, you've got an on-chain record now that actually the artist verified and can go along with the transaction. I think that's super helpful. So it does allow you to future-proof your investment when those intermediaries that are issuing receipts are no longer around. And the reality is that, you know, a lot of merchants don't make it past sort of 10, 20 years. And so therefore, who is going to determine whether that receipt is valid if the merchant's not able to authorize it?
Yeah, interesting. Okay, thank you. Last question, and it's around NFT market sentiment. So as you said, we went through this kind of big boom cycle. NFTs were one of the, you know, alongside DeFi, were one of the two big trends that drove a lot of the narrative and volumes and arguably innovation in crypto last cycle. This cycle, whilst we have seen some things emerge and become clearer, we've also seen the floor prices, so the like the cheapest price for a collection, drop really significantly across many of the kind of blue chip NFTs. And there remains a lot of uncertainty in the market. How do you think about that? Because you're using NFTs very specifically and deliberately, rather than the kind of popular conception of a monkey picture. But nevertheless, that kind of broader context for NFTs must be impactful in some way. Do you think that in a year's time, we're going to be like, NFTs are so back? Do you think it's going to continue to be murky for a while longer? How do you see this sentiment resolving?
Early internet, we had titles like Director of E-commerce and Head of Internet or Chief Multimedia.
Webmaster.
Exactly. There were all these sort of like terms that then like fell by the wayside, and they just became more incorporated into just straight tech or marketing. And, you know, I don't think anybody would think that online is an option. It's a must, right? If you're selling. And so I think we're going to get there. with tokens and digital assets. And, you know, the term NFT, I think, has been one that, you know, even people in the space are trying to move away from, because it has been so tarnished, it has become toxic. And even like Web3, I think, has become a little bit caught up in all of that. When we looked at things like Web2, right, I don't think anybody suddenly thought, if they were on Facebook, oh, I'm on a Web2 platform. They just suddenly had a better online experience, right? And I think that's where we'll get to with Web3 as well, that there'll just be ways that having a token is going to allow you to move so much more seamlessly between other people's kind of platforms. And is it going to make the either onboarding smoother, or it's going to make the kind of experience of being in a community or having a certain sort of loyalty scheme smoother? I definitely see that we're at the early stages of building that infrastructure. And I also think from an authentication standpoint, it makes total sense. And it's an easy way. I mean, I'll give you an example. Like now, when we do token gating, in the past, it would be quite complicated to actually touch somebody's system and then take the information from that system and then put it in somebody else's system and say, is this an eligible person? And how have you shared that information? Lots of challenges around privacy requirements and GDPR and all that kind of stuff. But now someone has a token and that person is verifiable in another person's system because they own a token. And so you could actually do things a lot more fluidly than you were in the past.
Yeah.
So I do think that digital assets are here to stay. I think that the language is very much still up in the air in terms of whether or not we'll even be using the term NFT in 5 years' time, or whether we'll go back to just digital art if it's a case of art, or just digital assets if it's the case of asset, or some type of key or access key or token that other people in marketing loyalty schemes might use. So yeah, we're still a big believer. We know it's been a rough ride. And you're right that the overall floor prices have dropped, but there's also more mature understanding now of the market. And I pointed out, and we've written about this on our blog on Verisart, which is a great place to go learn more about Web3 and also see some of the case studies of how we worked with people like Shepard Fairey, Johnny Depp, and other sort of galleries or different types of merchants, is that last year, despite the kind of like still the crash in the prices for NFTs, some NFTs were surpassing their auction highs from the height of the market, particularly around those artists that had crossed over into the fine art community and were being sold at Christie's and Sotheby's and creating new records for their work, and those really being generative artists. So I do think that story of generative art is very much here to stay, but I think there's a broader story about use of tokens among merchants. And yeah, we'd love your merchants to try out our app on the WooCommerce store. And please get in touch with us directly, or me and Robert at Verisart.com. If you have any, you know, questions, or you need a little bit of help, we do custom development at times for merchants. But we also try and put as much in our kind of core product services as possible. So yeah, right now on WooCommerce, we support minting and certification. We hope that we'll be adding additional functionality to the app as we see it evolve.
Perfect. And thank you for letting people know where they can get hold of you. That was great. Last question. Maybe you don't have an answer to this, but as somebody, like not many people, I suspect, have insight into this kind of brave new world of luxury consumerism. What's the most unexpected luxury thing that you've had a certificate for authentication through Verisart for?
Yeah, we have, and this was surprising to me. We have two things I think are interesting. One is a very high-end watch maker who's based in the Middle East. And these watches are real works of art. They cost more than most works of art as well. They're in the sort of $50,000 plus price point is what they start at. And that was unusual for me to see such a high-end product being certified on Verisart, and one that I wasn't aware of before. And then we also have like amazing, which is unusual, like calligraphy designs that have also been certified with us, that are carved in wood and highly intricate, and also from that part of the world. We also currently have a Maori art collective that's doing art from that part of the world, New Zealand. And that's the great thing about my job, is that we're always seeing like new ways that creators and merchants are finding to certify their creations.
Must be a wonderful world to live at that intersection between technology and art. And it's been wonderful to talk to you, Robert. I'm very grateful for your time and sharing your insights.
Likewise, thank you for having me on your show.
Take care.
Hey, Bob WP here, and I'd like to thank Omnisend.com and HostingYour.com for their support. Please consider checking them out. And thanks again for tuning into all things WordPress and WooCommerce. If you're not subscribed, just head over to dothewoo.io/subscribe or find us on your favorite pod player. And remember, you can subscribe to any of our shows directly or hear them all on our Do The Woo full channel feed. Until the next time.